Welcome back to Patriots Preview. Mark Bertrand alongside Big Jim Murray from our Town Fair Tire Studios. For the guaranteed lowest price on tires, go to Town Fair Tire, because nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Welcome back. It's Patriots Preview, driven by your New England Honda dealers. Welcome in from the MMQB, Bert Breer, who joins us now. Bert, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. I know you're good for a take on just about anything related to the sport of football, so let's ask you about this. I've seen you tweeting about such matters in recent months. How do you feel about the news today that Gillette Stadium will not be allowing fans back into the building for the remainder of the season?
I'm not surprised. I mean, I think this was, like, from the start bound to be a team-by-team, state-by-state thing, and probably reflective of the area that you live in. So, you know, in areas where they're a little more lax, there were always going to, like, more likely to be fans. And where in areas where it's tighter, it was going to be like this. So, you know, like, I don't think it's a surprise that we're seeing, like, in Texas, that there are 25,000 fans at a Cowboys game. And for the same sorts of reasons, I'm not surprised that there won't be fans in Massachusetts. I'd be shocked if there were fans in California all year. I just think all of that's sort of reflective on where you are in the country.
Have you heard from any players throughout the league that they've liked having some of these guys, some of the fans back in these stadiums? I mean, granted, it's like 15, 16 in Dallas, you know, 25, but have they appreciated having the fans back?
Yeah, I think it makes a difference, Murray. Like, I really do. Like, it's interesting because I had one player say to me, I think this was Tayshaun Gibson from the Bears. And he said to me, he's like, it sort of feels like peewee out there because you can hear your coaches yelling at you, you know, and how, like, in peewee football, the coach is standing behind the team. And he's like, there are literally cases where, like, I can hear my defensive coordinator telling me what to do in the middle of a play. And so, you know, that sort of added another dynamic to it. I think it's made it, I would say, harder to play defense. And I think it's made it easier on the offenses. And it sort of highlighted some of the things that exist in the NFL too, which is an interesting element to it. I don't think a lot of people are talking about, like, if you look at it, right, like, there are better athletes at the receiver position than there are at the corner position. So we're seeing that now affected. There are better athletes in the defensive line than there are in the offensive line, but you're taking one of the advantages the defensive linemen have away now because the crowd noise isn't there. So I think you add that up and you can see why there's been a little bit more scoring. So I think that there's just – it's different from place to place, but I do think, like, by the time we get to the end of the year, the teams that are used to playing in empty stadiums, like, if they're playing critical games in those empty stadiums and the other teams are used to playing in stadiums with 15, 20,000 people in them, like, I think there could be an advantage there. I think this is all sort of a moving target in that way.
So, Bert, we heard some more clarification on the possibility of adding playoff teams. It appears that it will only happen if critical games are unable to be played at the end of the regular season.
Right.
Let me ask you about the playoff bubble. Is that still something the NFL is strongly considering?
I don't think so. I don't think it's going to happen. I'd be surprised if it did. Although, you know, if they did wind up going to an 18th week, it'd be a little easier to do it because then you'd be condensing the playoffs from 5 weeks down to four. It may still be discussed somewhere, but I haven't heard much about that. And I'd say over a month. It sounds to me like they're pretty happy with where the protocols have taken them to this point. And I think they're confident that they can get to the end of the season and then have a full complement of playoffs. And that doesn't mean, like, everybody's going to be available for every game. I think there's been an acceptance of the reality that, you know, you could have key guys out in key spots. And there are going to be points where maybe it's not even fair. You know, like, it could be someone comes down with, you know, I don't even know how to put this, the regular flu. And, you know, he has to sit out a game because they can't distinguish it from COVID. So I think they've sort of come to that comfort level where they feel like, okay, you know, we are, you know, we're okay with the fact that there are going to be some inequities here. And this thing is going to look a little sideways for the rest of the year. The important thing to the people involved is that the games get played. And I think they feel confident that the
impressive win in the AFC East to you, Bills over Seattle or Miami at Arizona.
I think it was probably Miami over Arizona just because I think we know what the Bills are. And I don't think it's, like, wholly surprising that Buffalo was able to move the ball up and down the field on Seattle's defense based on how bad the Seahawks have been on that side of the ball. To me, I thought Miami going in there with a quarterback making his second start, And putting on the sort of performance they did, you know, against a team that was also playing a critical game. I mean, for the Arizona Cardinals, that was a chance to go into first place in the NFC West. I thought it was enormously impressive, Jim. And I honestly, I look at it right now, like, I think Brian Flores is the coach of the year in the NFL, and I'm not sure there's a close second. He's done a really, really good job down there. And I think, you know, it just feels like now he's at that point where he knows his team really well, and he's pushing all the right buttons. And I think there's no better, you know, example of that than the decision to switch quarterbacks, which it was easy to question at the time. And now, you know, it looks like it's kind of raised the ceiling on the entire season for them.
We're talking with Burt Breer of the MMQB. If there is a team with a losing record in the league that their record doesn't necessarily represent what they are as a team, what team would that be for you, Burt? And are the Patriots at all in that conversation?
That's a good question. Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, I don't think it, I certainly don't think it represents, like, the program, the Patriots program. I think more than anything else, it sort of represents a confluence of events, like everything coming together at once, where you had, you know, you have the element of, you know, losing your quarterback, you have the element of all the draft, the bad drafts, you have the element of losing, you know, guys to opting out. It was just like a lot of things coming at once, coming together in the wrong direction at once. But I think it is reflective of how poorly they've drafted and some of the roster management issues they've had the last few years. If I look at it like a team that maybe isn't represented by the record that they have.
There are eight teams in the league right now with two wins.
The easy answer would have been the Bears, right? Like that they weren't as good, but they've lost three in a row now. I'd say the Vikings. I think the Vikings are better than 3-5. Like I think, like, if you watch them play and you see them play like week to week, how they've performed now, you know, Cousins was a little wild and up and down early in the year, but, you know, I think if you look at how they've played on balance, you know, I think they're better than a 3-5 team. So
you know
who
I think it is?
I'll
I'm going to give you my pick on this. Okay. I think it's the Chargers.
Really? Yeah, that's a fair one,
I think the Chargers are better than their record would indicate, and they've lost a ton of close games to this point.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's, you know, I mean, God, like, it's going to be tough on that coaching staff now too, you know, based on where they are and where they're going. And, you know, the fact that they're entering like a critical period now where everybody wants to take advantage of having, you know, your quarterback, your young franchise quarterback on a rookie deal. Well, they're, you know, entering a critical 2 to 3 year period now where they're going to be able to build differently than almost any other team in the league because they've got a young quarterback on the cheap. And so, yeah, it's going to be interesting seeing how all of that plays out with, yeah, it's going to be interesting just seeing how all of that plays out.
They've got six losses so far, and here is the differential. Here's what they lost by in each of the six losses: 3 points, 5 points, 7, 3, 1, and 5. They don't have a single loss by more than a touchdown.
Probably looked a lot like that last year.
And that was I mean, yesterday that was a brutal way to lose yesterday.
Yeah, and that includes two overtime losses before they even lost yesterday against Vegas.
Right, and losing to Vegas the way they did yesterday, where, I mean, the guy literally had the ball in his hand. Like, twice that happened at the end of the game, where Mike Williams and then Parham, the tight end, where those guys had the ball in their hands at the end of the game. And the interesting detail there, too, guys, is, like, the corner who was in the game that was defending on both those plays was only playing because of a Raider injury earlier in the game. Like, that guy was in there because somebody else got hurt. So, yeah, it's just brutal ways to lose. And you're right, Beetle. I mean, there's talent on that roster. Now, they've had injuries. Obviously, Derwin James is out. Bosa's been banged up. But, yeah, I would say they're a better team than 2-6, no doubt about it. They're definitely better. I would definitely say they're better than the Broncos, and the Broncos are ahead of them in the division.
So say the Jets hang on, they remain winless, or they just end up with the number one overall pick. Is Trevor Lawrence that much of a slam dunk in your opinion, Bert? Or
yes.
Is he's worth taking and moving on from Darnold?
Yes, and I there are very few teams, I think, that wouldn't come to the conclusion that they should move on from their young quarterback. And here's the way I would explain this to you, Jim. John Elway, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, Trevor Lawrence. This is a once-in-a-decade prospect. And so this isn't, I mean, like, look, I love Joe Burrow. You know, he's done a great job early on. You know, you saw good things from Goff and Wentz early in their careers. But there's this very, very small group that's in a different category. And Trevor Lawrence is in a different category altogether. The other thing is with Darnold, you're at a decision point with him where you're going to have to make a decision on his fifth-year option after this year. And under the new CBA, those options are now fully guaranteed. So the Jets after this year, if they don't take a quarterback in the draft, are going to have to make a call on Sam Darnold's contract. And it's going to be about a $25 million decision for 2022. And if they say yes, then they're locked in for that money for 2022, which basically takes them out of the quarterback market for 2 years. You know, if you take Lawrence, then you're starting that, you know, again, that quarterback on a rookie contract clock. And, you know, I just think it sort of like gives everybody who's in that building, whoever the new coach is, Joe Douglas, gives them time to build with one of, again, a guy who's just a generational prospect at the position.
Do you think it's too late for Darnold, though, or can he be salvaged? Say if he
no, I think here. He can be – no. I think – like don't get me wrong. Like, I think Darnold can still be a really good player. And I think if he goes to the right place, like, this could wind up being – Steve Young getting out of Tampa might be the right comparison there. Sure. Like, I don't know if he's going to become Steve Young, but, like, I think it could be, like, somebody could see it that way, you know, like, where – it's just a guy who was in a bad place at the beginning of his career. And you guys remember how bad Tampa was in the 80s and the
brutal
90s. Right. Like, so like it could be like somebody's going to look at it and say, that's what it is. Right.
How
like,
do we get him to New England is really the question.
And that's the thing is here. Like, so I think there's going to be a market for him. And that's the other thing you're going to have to pay. So like, I look at Indianapolis. I think they could take a swing at him. San Francisco, I know Kyle Shanahan liked him coming out. Denver, he was the number one quarterback on Denver's board. If he had fallen to Denver with the fifth overall pick, the Broncos would have taken him. Pittsburgh, like the Steelers, how nice would it be for the Steelers if they could flip, say, the 30th pick in the draft to have the next guy after Ben in place? I think there's going to be a market for Sam Darnold. And the bad news for people in New England is that if there is a market for Sam Darnold, why in the world would the Jets trade him here if they have a comparable offer somewhere else?
They wouldn't do it. Let me ask you one more quick one.
Yep.
As heard on Felger and Maz earlier today, Big Jim was talking about this earlier. Would Houston at all entertain offers on Deshaun Watson?
No, because I don't think they're going to have another option. They don't have a first round pick. So, you know,
well, that's how they can restock and reload.
Right. But like, if you had the first or second or third pick in the draft now, like, again, I don't know who the coach is going to be. And we never thought Jay Cutler would have gotten traded from Denver, for example, in 2009 before it happened. Right. So, right. Like, you never say never, and we don't know who the coach is going to be. We don't know who the GM is going to be. So I guess it's sort of like there's some mystery there, but no. Like, I know how much ownership likes him. He was one of four players on that roster that was off limits ahead of the trade deadline. You know, and I think at the very least, whoever comes in there is going to want to at least give him a shot, especially because they already paid him. Like, he's already under contract for the next few years, so – I think it makes sense for them to, you know, I don't think it would make any sense for them to move on from him. The only scenario I would say where that would make sense, again, is if somehow they had the first overall pick and they were in a position to draft Trevor Lawrence, which, of course, as we all know, they won't be because Miami has their pick.
All right, Bert, appreciate the time as always, bud.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Enjoy the game. Bert Breer from the MMQB joining us here on Patriots Preview. We'll get back to your phone calls coming up, 617-779-0985, and we'll be talking to Jeff Howe of The Athletic. That's coming up just minutes from now as well on the Safety Insurance 98.5 Sports Hub, Patriots Radio Network.